Welcome to Whatever Works, our unique fortnightly podcast in which we talk about whatever works in our lives and in the lives of our community members. Find us at whateverworks.works. And why not join our community? Simply search for Whatever Works at MeWe.com and get stuck in.
Voice locally, but this Mac has never, ever, ever failed to record anything.
Oh, famous last words.
Well, we've got a backup here because I'm recording the Teams call anyway.
Yeah.
Okay, listeners, we're all backed up. Everybody's backing up. Are we going to back up anything worth saying?
It's uncertain. The jury's out.
You can back up whatever you like. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Whatever Works. Steve, that voice you can hear there is Steve Litchfield. Steve's decided that he will lower himself to join Aidan and I for this episode 225, which is at the very, very, very tail end of June in 2025. Hello, Steve.
Hello, yes. When I set this date and agreed to come on, I did not realise it would be 31 degrees centigrade in my office. So I've gone downstairs and I've got fans on and it's about 27 here. So I'm sweltering, but I'm good to go.
Very good. And Aidan, how are you doing?
I can concur with Steve. Actually, I'm not as bad as Steve at the moment. I'm 25.6 in my studio, if the thermometer is to be believed. But it is certainly sweltering outside at 29 and a half. So, yeah, they're expecting 34-odd today, aren't they, today? Yet another record is going to be broken. But not to worry. We shall be indoors making merry.
As we were saying on PSE last night, be grateful you're not in the south of Spain, I guess.
Wow, yes.
Which is reaching 44 degrees. Whateverworks.works is our website. That's where you'll find links to all the stuff we're going to talk about today. And apart from that, we have websites. SteveLitchfield.com is where you'll get Steve. AidanBell.com is where you get Aidan. And TedSalmon.com is where you'll get me. Apart from it being... You see, I'm kind of okay up here at the moment. I am too hot, but then I'm always too hot. But up here, it's 21 degrees today. There's a huge south-north divide going on.
A trifle, my goodness. I wish I was with you, Ted. But not for you, just for the weather.
Yeah. But I've got nothing else to tell you about except the weather. So what have you got, Aidan?
What have I got? Isn't it funny? The weather just takes over. And I'm very much a person who feels that lethargy when the hot weather comes in. Oh, do I really have to get up and walk across to the other side of the room? Good grief. Yeah, nothing major to report in life except that I wish it wasn't so hot. Are you the same, Steve? I mean, I know you have a lot to do. You have family business and you can't afford to just sit on your bum and wish it was cooler. Do you struggle in the heat or are you quite good with the heat?
I'm okay because I kind of semi-retired from home and I can largely keep cool. But the kind of news here is that having been semi-retired now for, 2 or 3 years, still chugging along to a low extent, my wife is fully retiring next month. So this is all quite exciting. This has been a frantic month, but... July 2025, she retires age 59, which beats me by a year. So I'm kind of proud of her, really. And yes, I'll have more time at home with the wife and be able to do more trips out and more fun, more adventures. So I'm quite looking forward to life from here on in.
So you're going to just sit in the garden and pretend you retired to the Med and it will be the same effect.
Yes, and a lot cheaper.
Hey guys, I've got to tell you something. Go on, sorry, Ted, you wanted to say something?
No, you go on, go on.
I sort of got a go figure here. I ordered a replacement battery last week for my Dymo. We've talked about these on the show before, the Dymo printer that I have for making labels. And the battery up and died because I hadn't used it for so long. I ordered a replacement one on Amazon. Of course, I didn't want to spend a fortune on the authentic one, so I paid £16, which was still quite a bit, for the equivalent battery, which is fine and is doing the job perfectly, and I've got no problem. I'm holding in my hand a sort of gift packet that came with it that I really can't quite figure. All I ordered and all I thought I was going to get was the battery until I noticed way down in the small print it did say includes a set of repair tools, which are 10 small screwdrivers with various different heads, 2 plastic tools, which sort of remind me of the ones we used to use in the good old days when you could take the back off phones and you used to have to pry
they're plectrums.
Well, no, that's the next thing. And as well as those two back-of-phone prying tools that are now out of date, are two I can only describe as plectrums. They look like guitar plectrums. And, I mean, and I've got some sticky labels in there as well, and two rubber bands. Oh, and one of those, there must be an official name, you know, Steve, the dingy thing that you remove SIM cards with, the little bendy piece of wire that's specially made for pushing into the little hole and taking out SIM cards. I've got one of those as well. I'm really not sure why I've got this little gift. Oh, and a key ring, and a rubber suction thing with a key ring attached to it. So God knows why they've sent all this. It just tickled me that I ordered a battery and ended up with an entire toolkit in a plastic bag. So go figure, folks. The fun of Amazon.
It must be so cheap for them to do that they just do it, I guess. And they'll probably fall apart in 5 minutes.
It's probably a lot of rubbish that they couldn't sell, and they decided to just bundle it into a bag. But then I would have thought they would have made more of a song and dance about it. I mean, it was very sort of under. Yeah. Oh, by the way, we're going to send you all this rubbish you don't want as well. Anyway, there we go.
I got one. My debit credit card bank financial house sent me out a new card over 2 months ahead of the old one expiring. I don't know if that's, I can't remember the last time it happened, but they sent it to me on the 20th of June, and I went to look at my card, and the old one doesn't expire until the end of August, which means they've sent it like 10 weeks in advance. A load of bollocks that is. Is that normal? Is that what happens?
I could imagine 2 or 3 weeks would be probably very helpful. I mean, supposing you live abroad or you're a businessman and you're going away for a month's trip somewhere, then you'd be very glad to have it in advance. But 2 months does seem a bit excessive, yes.
I've seen it that far in advance as well, and I can only assume that they send them out like 2 or 3 weeks early, and people complain they didn't get them, and then they have to send another one out, and then they're without a card for a while. So think, okay, well, let's send them out earlier, and so people still have problems, let's send them out even earlier. And they've worked out that 2 months ahead, they've got time for a couple of cycles and backwards and forwards, so as not to have anyone complaining. That's all I can.
But you could imagine the new complaint, which is, well, I received it 2 months ago, but I don't know where I put it. Can you send me another one now, please?
And also, signing the back. What on earth are we told to sign the back of the card for? Nobody ever uses the back signature thingy, surely, do they?
I think it's a hangover from the old days when credit cards used to go, and you remember they go into a machine and somebody would slide a roller back and forth and you'd produce pieces of paper. And then they would always diligently check your signature against the one you've just signed on the bit of paper. I presume it's a hangover from that.
Yeah.
Also, I suspect that if you were, say, to lose your card in a store and then go back to claim it, that then it's just possible that looking at your signature on the back and asking you to sign something over the counter and seeing the two match might give extra authenticity, where someone else finds your stolen card and then does a sort of fake signature and maybe, you know, impersonates you in some way. There are some suggestions for why you should still sign your cards, I think.
That would scare me, though, because my signature never matches 2 times in a row.
I consider myself told. Now, Aidan, we've got some really bad news about the camp copy item that we had on the last show, haven't we?
I love the way you slipped in Gaydon there before talking about camp coffee. I'll just let that one go, Tim.
It was completely unintentional.
No, well, the only thing is that I diligently went out and bought some camp coffee and then decided, wouldn't it be fun if the two of us, or indeed the three of us initially, were going to taste it on the show? And I said, listen, Ted, let's all just make a cup of camp coffee on the show and we'll all taste it together and talk about our immediate reactions. Of course, Steve then pointed out that he's never, I think no coffee has ever passed your lips, has it, Steve? So
no.
Then I said, well, that's all right. Then Steve can drink a glass of water and he can be the control. But then you were unable to buy any, Ted. Apparently your Tesco doesn't sell camp coffee. That's disgusting. You should write to the Prime Minister at once.
It's a very small Tesco, and they do have... it's actually quite surprising that for the size of the town, that they've got one as big as it is, frankly, because it's a small town. But I won't complain about that. But there are gaps in their stock. And I did also try the local co-op as well, and they didn't have any. So next show, we promise, even if I have to say pay through the nose on Amazon to get some, next show we'll do it, OK?
Well, I tell you what, I've put on my shopping list today to buy one of those cheap little plastic bottles you can get in over the counter at Tesco, Tesco's sell them. And I'll just put half of mine into a plastic bottle and post it to you, Ted. So by the next show, we'll be able to do a camp coffee taste test, as spoken about on the last show.
Perfect.
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 I bring you more on the Weed Killer Flamethrower. We've talked about that in a couple of shows now. If you remember initially, was it Simon Bates initially who bought the thing? The Weed Killer, that basically is a flamethrower. You kill your weeds by blasting them with a quick blast of hot flame, which seemed like great fun, if nothing else. But I was very concerned, and we talked on the last show, Ted, I think, about whether that might damage your patio if you're throwing flame at it. Simon Bates has come back saying, I have one of the weed burners, and I can happily inform you that they do not damage the driveway. The flame is so intense, it takes nanoseconds to incinerate a weed and move on to the next. So that was good news. Stephen McBride then popped up on the group and said, I have a weed wand. You just wave it and say, Axio weed, and they disappear. It's an electric rather than gas wand, but it works in the same manner. It burns the weeds with an electric element. I've never had any issues with it scorching the paving. It does, though, take an absolute age to use. Each weed needs a good 30 to 45 second blast to fully burn away. I'm not sure if the gas ones may be quicker to use. For me, a quick 2 second squirt with Weed Killer does the job far quicker. Yeah, and you know what? I've been thinking about it since we've discussed it on the last couple of shows. I simply don't have enough weeds to be worth my paying. I don't think, what is it, about £19? I don't think it was terribly expensive. Yeah, but was, even 19 quid, I can't justify for the few odd weeds that we've got. And I tend to agree with Stephen. The Weed Killer does a very good job, but I would have enjoyed at least the fun of going around feeling like Arnold Schwarzenegger in Terminator blasting weeds away with flame.
Simon Bates says it takes nanoseconds with the flame, so obviously the electric one is much, much less efficient.
Pause there for the electrician to drop in, but he didn't.
No, I can see the physics behind all this, but in this current climate, the thought of adding more heat into the universe seems rather going the wrong way, so I'm going to veto this one for that reason.
Yeah, I think it would be a lovely thing. Again, as we often say in the show, something, I want one of those for 5 minutes just to look at and go, wow, that's fun, isn't it? I'll give it to you back now. Yeah, there we go.
Oh, look, our friend Jim Fowler's jumped ship and come to Whatever Works.
Yes, Jim Fowler says, on the subject of the Honiture robot, £129. I bought one of these a while back as it was on offer. It can easily absorb dirt and pet hair hiding in the floor cracks and carpets. I assume this is one of these little mini vacuum cleaners that rolls around your flat floors when you're not around. He says it's 50 decibels quiet, can work continuously for 150 minutes, sweeps, vacuums and mops in one, separates the dust box and water tank, easy to clean. This sounds like an Amazon listing,
yes,
really.
It does.
He says four cleaning modes, zigzag, spot, edge and random, identifies obstacles and changes the path, automatically increases the cleaning suction power for carpets, remote control, mobile apps, take a deep breath. Whew. Pair with Alexa for scheduling. It certainly does the business, though I'd like a self-emptying one, which is an awful lot of features, and I assume that means he's happy with all of those features. I did have my nephew's just bought a similar device, and he was showing me all the ways in which it doesn't work, as opposed to Whatever Works. I'm still sceptical of these. You've got to have an absolutely perfect house and sort of... without any carpets or rugs or things that get in the way and pets to annoy and so forth. Life's too complicated for one, but I applaud people who can make this work.
On the last show, we were talking, Aidan, weren't we, about corners, which we didn't really answer.
We were, and that's still my niggle is, how does it cope with an absolute 90-degree corner? It's a round vacuum. It can't get into the corner. So what does a little brush pop out on a little arm? I don't know what happens in the corners there. I remember on the last show we talked about the one that used LiDAR to actually learn your apartment. That was quite impressive, if it works. But I tend to be in your camp, Steve, that it probably needs a little bit longer before it's worth really shouting about.
I'm sure people who've got one of these, their house is a lot cleaner than mine. But when I do clean and notice it's dirty, I clean thoroughly and into the corners. So it's kind of an all or nothing approach.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, and it's me. I'm bringing you a purchase of my own that I made in the last couple of weeks. It's an how do you pronounce this? M-S-K-I-R-A. Mskira Photography Backdrop. It's basically two stands with a cross beam, and you can hang a sheet on it or a green screen or whatever you want. It's for filming. It's, in my case, it's for when I'm making self-tapes for castings and auditions that I have to do relatively frequently, and it's much nicer and more professional to have a plain background than the back of my living room or my studio or the back garden or whatever it might be. It does what it says on the tin. It's nothing to write home about. It's two stands. Each one goes up to 2.5 metres, so in my house I can hit the ceiling, which is what I want. The crossbar is in three pieces, so you can build that up to a maximum length of 3 metres, and it comes with six classic plastic clamps for clipping your sheets. It doesn't include any kind of sheeting or green screen. You have to provide that yourself. As I say, nothing really to write home about, but it does work. It stands up straight. It doesn't fall over. It's taking the weight of the cloth, and it's something I use. £34.84, which was a bit of an investment, but it was for my professional work, making casting tapes for jobs and such. So I'm very happy with it. So I can recommend the Mskira Photography Backdrop.
Do you get ripples in the cloth that you put up? Surely if there's any windows open or drafts, doesn't the material behind you just ripple slightly and distract?
It probably would. I have to, even in weather like this, I have to close the windows because we have a school at the back of the garden, and usually there's a lot of kids screaming and shouting. So if I'm making a video, I normally would shut all the windows anyway. But yes, you're quite right. Probably you have to end up using guide ropes and gaffer tape and fixing it on the sides, etc. The other thing is, of course, I have a simple white cloth that I have, which is, you know, sort of the size of two or three bed sheets. And of course, it's always got creases and crinkles in it. And if I want to be really anal about it, I've got a steam smoother that I can go and do the steam ironing to get the creases. Yeah, it's not your high end professional job at all, but it does what it says on the tin.
Talking of lower tech and whatever works, I had the same problem when I was shooting my phone show videos starting in about 2009 or so. I thought, let's up the quality. Let's give myself a plain white background, not, you know, a busy bookcase or whatever. And I was in HomeSense, our local home bargain shop, and they had an artist canvas that was about a metre and a half by about a metre, which is not huge, but it's large enough that you can film yourself against it if you put it in the right position. And because it was solid white canvas, it didn't ripple or distract in any way. It just stayed as solid white. And there was no setup time and no stands and no materials. I just literally popped it on top of a table or something, stood in front of it, and there I was with a pure white background. And people can go back and watch my old plug, my old phone show videos and see the white background in action. Fun. It was about £30.
Brilliant. And I mean, I wish that I only had to do Head and Shoulders in my videos. But, you know, sometimes they say we want you to film yourself, pretend you're walking down the street and you meet somebody holding an umbrella or whatever they might be asking you to do. And then you've got to be full body plus movement. So, yes, unfortunately, I wouldn't be able to use something like that. Ted, you were going to interject
there. I was just going to say, for Steve, from the pictures, it looks like you can also arrange in portrait, so we can do his annoying shorts as well as a broader landscape. If you look at the pictures, they obviously have thought about that, people creating shorts, and they've made it so that you can bring it in. And I think you said that the cross thingy was in three parts, didn't you?
That's right, yes. So you can, it must be three times a metre. So, yeah, you could have 1 metre up to three. Yeah. I mean, the other thing that's annoying, and I understand why you were so happy with yours, Steve, is that you just put it there and Bob's your uncle, it's done. Whereas with me, I've got to think, do I really want to do this audition? I've got to set up the stands and put up the crossbar and hang up the cloth. And yeah, it is a bit of a palaver.
Yeah.
Just a quick one from Anders Hagman, who says, thank you very much for your whatever works.
Sorry, that was a Tommy Cooper there.
Yeah. Thank you very much. Thank you very much for doing a Whatever Works special from Camera Creations. Enjoyed the podcast, and it was a great idea. So thank you for that feedback. The first one seems to have gone down quite well. We were going to do a second one this past week, but unfortunately everyone was on holiday and only me and Joe turned up, and so we didn't do it. But hopefully we'll be back on schedule for the next one when people will be returning, and we'll get it going again. But thank you, Anders, for your feedback.
The good thing about a Camera Creations podcast, where you're talking about largely about kind of retro gear, some current, but also a lot of retro gear, is that there's no real time pressure in terms of we've got to cover this latest product.
Yeah.
Because to be in advance of other people's reviews, you can just take your time because there is literally no hurry. It's like me doing a bit of a mini podcast on the Nokia E-series from 2007. I mean, it doesn't matter when it goes out. Go out in any decade and it'll be equally as valid. Yeah.
Good point.
This is the Adeptna Premium Wicker Gift Hamper. This was bought by my daughter, and the title on Amazon is Create Your Own Festive Present. Includes smooth rectangle, basket, ribbon, wood, wool and cellophane, brackets natural. Yes. Thank you, Amazon. The idea is that for someone's birthday, rather than individually wrapping a dozen small presents, which I just hate doing, you simply put all the presents neatly arranged, as is, in this tray, you know, as they came from the shop, but obviously with price tags removed. And apparently, this is the fashion now. You can obviously reuse the wicker gift hamper as well and for the next person's birthday or for Christmas or whatever. And it saves just hours of wrapping. You literally pile the presents into the hamper, maybe put a few little ribbons around the side, make it look pretty or festive or whatever. And there's one caveat. This particular one, the Adeptna one, comes with lots of red filler material to lay the presents on. Now, this looks great, but it has a virulent red, I'll put that in capital letters, virulent red dye in it. If any of it gets dropped on a floor, which it will, and then gets wet, which is entirely likely, the red dye permanently marks the surface. I've now got several nasty red streaks on my kitchen vinyl that resist all treatments and attempts to clean them away. I would suggest you get this brilliant little hamper, chuck all the red stuff in the bin, never see it again, and using your own bubble wrap or cotton wool or whatever to sort of pad out the hamper. But otherwise, a good idea, slightly ruined by the red dye.
Yeah, nice idea.
I have to say, Steve, you must have an extremely generous family because to my way of thinking, it's sort of one person, one present. I don't think I've ever given somebody so many presents at once that I feel I need to put them into a basket. Go on, Ted.
I did this with my dad for his birthday a couple of years ago, and I didn't know what to get him. He's got everything he needs, and blah, blah. So I got a bag, not a basket like this, but a bag, a gift bag, and I stuffed it full of all sorts of things. And inside the bag, I'd got a mug with a dad's army mug, which is his thing. And I just stuffed it full of all sorts of sweets and chocolate and all sorts of... So same principle, really. Not wrapping things up, but putting stuff into it. And I think that's where those bag ideas started, isn't it?
So I've been a bit pompous here. It's more like a sort of Christmas stocking thing of just little trinkets, little throwaway silliness.
Yeah.
Yes, OK, fair enough. Yeah. I'll get back in my corner.
The thing about my family is that... my wife's birthday coming up, I asked her what she wants, and she gives me an item, maybe two items. I go and buy them. And then my daughter says, but you can't just get her that. I said, but it's what she wanted. No, I'll go shopping. And she comes back with 15 different items from town, and we agree to split the cost or whatever. But my wife ends up with 17 items, but she asked for two. But, you know, it's just generosity and family and love and whatever. I'm not going to get in the way of that. But, yeah, if it was just me, they would get what they wanted and job done.
I
no
see.
Hamper needed.
So basically you have an elf that does the shopping for you. That's the bit that we didn't know.
I do, yeah. Yes, very good, very good. Very handy.
Here, Ted, do you remember the other in the last show, I talked about still using my fabulous, I think it's called Citro, I can't remember the name of it, freshly squeezed orange squeezer that you can... You can squeeze your own freshly immediate orange juice. And I was waxing lyrical about how fantastic it was and couldn't be beat. And then you made the good point, well, what's the difference between that and freshly squeezed orange juice that you buy in a shop? So just to let you know, I did a quick taste test this week. I picked up some 100% freshly squeezed orange juice from Tesco this week, and I did an A/B taste test with that next to home squeezed oranges, and it's another league. I mean, it really is. I presume the supermarket probably dehydrated and rehydrated later or whatever. I don't know how the process works, but I can only say again that freshly squeezed oranges in your own house that you've just squeezed and you drink immediately are absolutely gorgeous and cannot be touched by any fruit juice over the counter that I have ever found. So just to reiterate that.
Yeah, I do agree. And that's true with lots of things. Broad beans spring to mind, straight from the garden. And no broad beans taste like straight from the garden broad beans. And raspberries as well, which is one of my favourites.
Yes, yes.
So, I mean, probably all these things have been
deflavored by whatever process they go through. Yeah.
Yes, yes.
So yeah. There you go.
I would agree. There are three tiers of orange juice. I completely agree. There's the stuff that they make up from concentrate and is the cheapest and is okay but not very nice. Then you get the what they call freshly squeezed orange juice you buy by the litre, which is quite nice. It tends to get a bit dense towards the bottom of the carton. It's quite nice. And then you get, as you say, real oranges. You squeeze them yourselves and it looks different, tastes different, and is probably even healthier. So there are kind of three tiers, and I'm happy on the upper two tiers, less happy at the bottom.
Yes, I'm with you there, Steve, definitely.
I wonder who bought the VTech preschool laptop, which is 20 quid's worth of child's toy. But it just caught my eye because it looks like a laptop. It's obviously made of kind of this kind of Tonka toy plastic, which no doubt is really robust. It's got a mouse to one side, a keyboard with really big buttons in the middle, a really tiny screen in the middle of a platter that pulls up. But isn't that cute? It's got 30 activities. They reckon it focuses on counting and spelling and stuff like that for 3, 4, 5 year olds. Letters and words, shapes, numbers, food stuff, and focuses in on skill development for kids of that age. So it looks like a really interesting little thing. I'm not sure if we should be getting three-year-olds already into using computers, but that's another argument for another day, I suppose. Nice pink colour, and I would thank anyone that's bought it. And it just looked like an interesting little device. Any thoughts, anyone?
Not to pour any derision of any kind on someone else's happy purchase, and hoping their child is smiling as happily as the girl is in the photograph on Amazon. But when my daughter was this sort of age, 3, 4, 5, 6, we bought her several of these brightly coloured mock laptops with black and white screens, and it comes with 50 games, compared to just the basic iPad, which I know is a lot more expensive, but most of us have got iPads lying around. Put some children's games on an iPad and you've got a full colour screen with sound and whizzy graphics, and they're 1,000 times more immersed in that than they are in something like this, where the software is incredibly limited and the game is incredibly limited. So I would say, nice idea. You can't fault the price at 20 quid, but for goodness sake, spend 20 quid on children's games and educational games on your existing iPad. Put the iPad in a tough case, lend them that, and I think they'll be happier and they will learn faster. There we are. That's me being bit too negative. Sorry about
that's
that.
That's rather assuming that, as you say, every household has got an iPad kicking about.
Or an Android tablet. Anything with a larger screen. Even your old phone would probably do better, I would say. That I contend that is. Yeah. Yeah.
Any thoughts, anyway. Aidan?
Well, my thoughts are, if I had children, I wouldn't let them anywhere near any kind of tech at that age anyway. But that's another, as you say, that's another story. What about this cute little pink toy thing at the age of 3 and then the iPad at the age of 4, perhaps? I don't know. I think it's definitely one of those each to their own. There is no right or wrong way about it. And everybody has to make their own decision how they want to proceed.
I have seen 2-year-olds using an iPad swiping around the interface and using them, which is amazing, really. When I've shown an iPad to my, before he died, my 80-year-old dad and my 75-year-old mum, and neither of them could get the hang of the touchscreen. Then they've got decades of intelligence and experience behind them, and a 2-year-old toddler was manipulating the games and swiping them away and launching apps quite happily. So it just goes to show, really.
I've said on the show a few times before, I am so glad that at 61, I was growing up without computers, without the internet. I rode a bike, I fell off my bike, I played Conkers, I climbed trees. I'm very pleased about all of that.
So thank you, yes, very much to whoever bought this, the mystery buyer. So if you go shopping on Amazon, please do use my affiliate link. It really does help. I get a few pennies for whatever you buy. I don't know who buys what, but I do know what gets bought. The shopping experience is exactly the same to you. You just go in via tinyurl.com/AmazonTedUK, and I will be very grateful for anyone who does.
Thank you.
Still using and still using.
I am still using with great pleasure and enjoyment my Evolent, EVO. Evolent, Evolent right-handed wireless vertical mouse. And there's the catch. It's a vertical. It's what they call a handshake mouse. If you were asked to hold your hand out, chances are you would hold your hand out as if you were offering your hand for a handshake. You wouldn't hold your hand out with the palm facing down, because that's not natural for our skeletoid movement. And this mouse has been designed so that it places less strain on the arm. I had some trouble with my right rotator cuff a few years back. I think I talked about it on the show quite a bit, Ted. And so I changed over to this mouse, and I am convinced that this mouse has been a great help in easing my rotator cuff issues. And I now find it absolutely 100% natural to put my hand down on the mouse at 90 degrees rather than flat. And I'm really enjoying using it. It wasn't cheap. It was £121.60, although I paid 50. It's 12160 at the moment. I bought it in May 2024. I've used it almost daily ever since. It's also a nice mouse, as well as being the special 90-degree mouse. It's also an enjoyable mouse to use. It's got nice knobs and buttons and works fine for me, and I'm very pleased with it. But more to the point, it's good for my health, and I'm happy with that. So the right-handed wireless vertical mouse.
I've got two things to say about that. Uh-oh. I have tried the vertical mouse a couple of times in my life, and both times I have failed. My brain just will not let me get used to it, and maybe I've not tried for long enough. But it just doesn't feel right to me. I'm so used to, since about 1980, whatever it was, using a mouse in the traditional way. I just couldn't get used to it. But the second thing is that on my mouse, I've got I don't know what it's called, Steve. I can't remember. Inertia wheel, is it? So that when
Yeah,
the scroll wheel on the top, when you flick it, it scrolls and keeps scrolling down the page. And very few Mises have got that, it seems. Logitech ones have. But so I'm quite limited in that respect as well. So trying to get one of those on a vertical mouse as well, those are my two things. Any thoughts, Steve?
I have tried everything, because a customer of mine has got one of these vertical mice, as you call it, Mises. Every time I go round, I say, oh, this is interesting, and I play with it. And after about 5 minutes manoeuvring around his Windows desktop, I kind of get the hang of it. But I have got every computer I own, and my family has got, and every customer I go to, they've all got something different. So I've kind of had to get used to it. But what's interesting is that I'll find the older generation, I'm not including you in this, Aidan, but say 70 plus, they even though they've got a laptop, for example, with a perfectly good trackpad, and sometimes even a touchscreen, they still plug in a USB mouse. And I was handing my laptop to my wife, who is a local secretary and something, and I said, there you are, you can take notes on that. And the 70-plus lady said, but how's she going to use it? Where's your mouse? You've forgotten your mouse.
Yay!
It's got a touchscreen and a trackpad. Why the heck does it need a mouse? But yeah, interesting vertical mouse, interesting idea. I can see how it would help your wrist strain, and I have indeed used something similar. And once you get used to it, it's absolutely fine.
Yes, I have to say, the first week that I had it, I hated it with a passion, and I really regretted buying it. And I just said, well, Aidan, you spent £100 on this, you're going to bloody learn to use it. And then it was like that riding a bike moment. After a week or two, I suddenly realised it wasn't a problem after all. And now, if I use a different kind of mouse, it's the other way around. I now feel very strange if I'm having to put my hand flat on the table. I think, oh, this is uncomfortable. Where's my normal mouse? So, yeah, it's a question of getting used to it.
It certainly is. And I have to say, Steve, that I'm in the camp that you just described as over 70-year-olds. That is absolutely the first thing I always put attached to a laptop or anything. And put it on a table. I do not use a laptop on my lap. It's on a table or a desk. And the first thing I put on is a mouse. Absolutely. I'm with them. Quick one from me, which is my annual shout out to my iGenix air conditioner, which you can't buy anymore. It's the IG9901. I always shout out for it every year until it breaks. So it's still going. It was on last night. It was very warm in the night, very humid, and it worked really well. I worked out that I bought this thing from Amazon in July 18 for £320. So I reckon at £45 a year to keep me cool on those really nasty nights, it's been an absolute bargain. I did price up a new one for when this one breaks, and they're currently £276. So they are cheaper than they used to be, and I would just buy one without any hesitation if this one broke. It's an absolute absolute lifesaver. Like you were saying off air with me, Steve, if the temperature at night is intolerable to sleep, you've just got to do something.
Yeah, yeah. Does it use water? Is there like a water tank you have to refill, or is it purely electric?
No, no, it's electric. You pipe it out of a window. So the, but it does create water. So you have to. Right. It's got a tank in it, and it takes the water out of the air and it fills up the tank. Now, in order to not have that tank keep filling up, I actually have mine on a chair, and I take the bung out of the plug at the back and put a bucket underneath it, and so I don't have to think about the tank filling up, and that works really well. So this bucket fills up with water, and I just empty the bucket. But if you wanted to use it on the floor, you wouldn't be able to do that, of course. But yeah, you get this big 4-inch hose that you put out of a window.
Yeah. I am still using, and I can't believe some helpful chap has put a photograph in the show notes for you two guys to see. During the tail end of COVID, I went all survivalist. Remember that one when COVID was ending and Vladimir Putin invaded Ukraine? I thought, this, the end of the world's coming. I'm going to be survival. I'm going to be prepared for anything. And I tested the waters with a 1 kilowatt hour Jackery power station, along with 2 100-watt folding solar panels. The closest 2025 package, is you can't get exactly what I bought now, is the Jackery Explorer 1000 V2 plus 200-watt. Just see the link in the show notes and you'll see. It's on offer as I write this at £850, which is quite a bit less than I paid in 2022. For a less capable unit, I paid over £1,000 for all of that. So I'm still, overall, very impressed by all this, and yet disappointed at the same time. But the latter, because of the terrible summers, but, I mean, I know it's very hot at the moment, but last summer was a complete washout in terms of the sun. And getting the panels out and hooking them up to the Jackery power station in the garage takes about 3 minutes, long enough not to want to bother doing it multiple times a day if it looks like rain, or if it's just sunny spells where there wouldn't be much sun to capture anyway. When it works, as today, as we record this, and as in the recent Full on Sun, there's about 140 watts of power you can capture from the sun over about 7 hours, which is almost exactly, if you do the integration and maths, which Ted's not keen on, but I've done it for him, which is almost exactly 1 kilowatt hour, which fills the power station from empty for a day in the sun, which works out rather neat. Have I been using it for? Well, not that much, because 1 kilowatt hour isn't much in the grand scheme of things. Now, I know you and Gareth, Ted, chatted about this all about a couple of years back on Tech Addicts. The average house in the UK uses up to 10 kilowatt hours a day. But in the summer, I do plug our chest freezer into the Jackery, plus my wife's electric bike, various garden power tools. I charge up iPads and things. So all of these are at least powered or charged by the sun for 24-hour periods in which the sun was out all day to fill the power station. So that's something, but you know you can't drive a house from this. One catch is that, and this is my mea culpa moment. After you've plugged the freezer into this thing, you think, oh, I'm running my chest freezer off the sun. You have to remember to switch the freezer over to regular mains power the next day if it looks like being cloudy. I forgot the other day, and we almost lost a complete chest freezer full of food. I rescued it after 36 hours, and most things were just about below zero, and hopefully we haven't been poisoned. But yeah,
oh, dear, we have to eat all the ice cream.
Something like that. Anyway, so I am still using it. It still does the job, but it still can't do the job most people would expect it can do, if that makes sense.
You'd have to be very committed, wouldn't you, to, you say, keep going in and out and watching for the sun. But good for you, you know. It does save a few quid on the electric over a year, probably, even if it is a crappy summer.
Yeah, so let's say I save 20 quid a year or 30 quid a year. Okay, so it's going to take me decades to repay the £1,000 I spent on the equipment. But I just kind of feel like I'm making a gesture in terms of being independent, saving energy, getting energy from the sun. And I know it doesn't make any kind of economic sense, but I'm having fun, it's geeky, and it kind of serves a purpose. And as with Ted's power station, he's got, if there was an actual power cut, you know, for an hour or so, we'd be fine powering things and fridges and freezers and even boiling a kettle. I think that would all be possible.
I have to agree that when that has happened to me with my Anker version, I've been able to plug my router into it, and I've been able to plug in my laptop into it to make sure the battery keeps topped up, and it works really well. So for short-term power outages, I do agree with you. But I haven't tried near the solar charging. Aidan?
I'm totally with you on this, Steve. It's geeky fun. I had two questions. The first was going to be, has it paid for itself? Clearly not. And who cares? Never mind. It's fun. And that's the main thing. I mean, I'm totally behind you on all of that. My second question, though, why can you not simply leave... Are the solar panels not waterproof? Can you not just leave them out 24/7 and just have it charge up when the sun shines? Why do you have to put them up and take them down repeatedly?
In theory, they're rainproof. In practice, when it does rain, especially in the summer, the heavens open, and I imagine being absolutely soaked within an inch of their life, something's going to get into the electronics.
Okay.
On the back of the panels are some connectors, for example, and I know they're shrouded in rubber, but I just don't believe they're designed to be left out 24/7 all year round.
I
so
see.
If it rains while I'm out of the house and they're gathering sun, it's fine. It's really not going to be a problem, but I'm not going to leave them out overnight. And you get dew and humidity and then frost in the winter. I'm keeping them nice and pristine.
Then the next project is to build a dedicated greenhouse just for your little greenhouse to put the solar panels
yeah.
in.
That's a good idea.
My cheapest chips is Amazon Basics LR44 batteries, which I never knew existed. They're little button batteries. They're not like the size of those 10p piece ones. They're little ones. My dad needed one for his mantelpiece clock. And I just couldn't believe how cheap they are. The first one I saw was £5.59 for 40. I couldn't imagine why anyone would need to buy 40 unless you're running a clock shop and you want to get a stock in. But more sensibly, £2.70 for 6 of these things. And we got a packet, chucked them in the drawer. So when his clock claps out again in a year or two, we've got a little stock of them. So yeah, Amazon Basics batteries generally worth keeping an eye on.
I guess if you had a hearing aid that took them, then 40 would be a good number to have in stock. This is interesting, Ted, because my experience of these tiny little button batteries has always been that if you buy the cheap ones, either they don't work at all, or when you open the packet, there's already acid coming out of them, or they last for 10 minutes and then die. Amazon have got it right then. So, I mean, do you find that the longevity is good and the power is good and they're doing what they should do?
We've only just bought them. I'll let you know. We'll come back to this in 12 months and I'll answer your question.
I can feedback because Amazon Basics, they always do a good job. You can get cheap batteries on Amazon, but not Amazon Basics. And yes, you don't always get what you pay for. But the Amazon Basics alkaline batteries in all shapes and sizes, I absolutely swear by it. It's all I buy now. We buy them by the 12, by the 20, AAs, AAAs, quadruple A's. There is such a thing. We just buy the Amazon Basics brand and they've never once let us down. So Amazon do the homework and I trust them.
Excellent.
Excellent indeed. I've got a pond outside. I don't know if I've mentioned it on the show.
No,
not another one.
In the garden. I'm recently working on it. I had need to do some repair of a liner and make sure everything was properly waterproof. So I jumped onto our favourite shop and I bought some BOXOB pond liner repair patches. Ted, do you remember we've brought onto the show once or twice? I remember you brought a roll of see-through celluloid stuff that was ridiculously sticky. So sticky that you can barely touch it because your hands just clamp to it. Well, this is very similar. This is a very, very pleasant, sexy, rubbery substance. Very thick. It's about, I don't know, it's about three millimetres thick, this stuff. And it's got this unbelievably sticky goo on one side, and I used it very, very successfully for my job outside in the garden. It stuck instantly both to rubber and to plastic at the pond, so that did the job for me. And it had just occurred to me that at £9.99 for these two pieces, and each piece is about, I don't know, about 6 inches square in old money, it's worth having. It's worth keeping one of these in the garage because you could, I mean, I imagine you could probably, you could do a passable repair, temporary repair on a bike tire. I wouldn't be surprised if it just got you home. But there must be a myriad of things, tents and tarpaulins and all sorts of things that could benefit from this beautifully sticky, rubbery goo. It's perfectly clean and fine on one side, and the other side has the stickiness from hell. So it's just one of those things. When you apply it, do not get it wrong, because if it touches anything, it's going to be gripped to that forever. So I mean, when I applied the stuff, I had to do it with the greatest care, because once you stick it, it's stuck. Pond liner repair patches.
I love the name BOXOB. That's just great, isn't it?
My cheapest chips, I think this was mentioned before by Chris Bates back in 2020, but that was kind of a guest contribution. I don't think a host on the show has actually mentioned. This is Command Picture and Frame Hanging Strips. Now, this is kind of instead of drilling a hole and putting in a hook or screw, which really you need to damage the wall, et cetera, and you might get it wrong. And then when you've finished using it, you have to fill them in again. We started using these in the last couple of years and have been quite impressed. They're kind of double adhesive strips with Lego-like plastic protrusions on their back. You stick one half to a wall and the other half to a picture or similar, and you just press them together with like a very satisfying Velcro crackling noise. When it comes time to remove them, you just lever up from the bottom and the angle generated gets the Lego-like spikes to disengage. And then the adhesive section on the wall has a little pull tab at the bottom. And this loosens the glue in much the same way as a battery pull tab inside a phone. So in practice, you need two of them for a picture, one either side, each made up of two strips. And there are some subtleties like pressing the adhesive bits for 30 seconds to allow them to really stick, and then waiting an hour for everything to cure before hanging the item. And I was sceptical, plus Command strips aren't dirt cheap. 12 pairs for 12 quid or so, up to that's a pound to hang a picture with no drilling or damage, which is kind of okay if you put it like that. I've now hung four pictures over the last 6 months in my house. Before that, it was my daughter in her university rented room recommending Command strips. They're stronger than you think they'll be for just, quote, some plastic and glue. Quite a bit stronger. Now, there are some cheaper clone strips out there, but I'd recommend the original Command strips with that brand name for maximum strength. And I have was one caveat, which I've discovered in the last week, as I tried to remove one of these, and I found that yours truly, who had painted the room, didn't put enough paint on. So when the strip came off, it did kind of take the paint off with it. But that's down to me not decorating on the cheap, I think, rather than a defect in the command strip. And along similar lines, I have to mention, I know I've mentioned it before as a guest, BluTac. Again, BluTac, which is a pound a packet these days. I can't believe, along the lines of Ted and his batteries, BluTac is a pound a packet on Amazon. When did this get so cheap? Not so much for hanging things on walls, but for bridging small gaps between accessories, holding cables in place and so on. 101 users around the house for a quid. I'm just saying it saves the day several times a week here. Big blob of blue tack, press it together, job done, job sorted. There we are. That's my plan.
Here. Absolutely. Yes. Vive la blue tack.
All in agreement, yeah. I use blue tack a lot. Right, quick one from me is the Acer Swift AC adapter. I don't know if you remember back in the day, but when we used to, probably 15, 20 years ago, if you wanted a spare cable and brick for your laptop computer, it was just so expensive. I started recently using my a little laptop that was in the garage, an Acer Swift 5, and I thought, I need to get a spare cable for that. $12.99. So, you know, obviously someone in China is knocking this stuff out really cheap now, yeah. Like a lot of things, I suppose. And, yeah, $12.99 for the three-pin plug, the cable, the brick that goes between, the plug that fits in perfectly as if it was the original. Maybe it is the original, but, yeah, $12.99.
My only concern is you just say they're knocking them out cheap. I mean, Steve, you'll know more than I do about the electronics that goes on in these things and how they have to be properly balanced. Would you, is it safe? That's my question.
I wouldn't put my reputation on something with a brand I hadn't heard of. I know that my daughter's got an Acer Swift laptop, and buying an original Acer adapter is a lot more expensive than $12.99, but you get the guarantee that they've actually tested it properly. Use with caution. Don't leave it on when it's warm, when the laptop's empty and you're out of the house, just in case it catches fire. But yeah.
By the way, Ted, I'm going to have you up before Judge Barton. This is $12.99, and we have a £10 ceiling on cheap. So actually,
I did slightly bend the rules, but I think it was worthy of note because, back in the day, this is just such a drag. I can remember having a Dell laptop back in the day and trying to find a replacement thing for it. Dell wanted 250 quid for one, and then you go onto Amazon and try and find one, and even the no brand NatNo name ones were like 100 quid each or 120 quid each. and $12.99. And whatever Steve says, it appears to work. And, you know, okay, it might not work in the long term. But anyway, I was just amazed at the price difference. So in the scheme of things, it is cheap as chips.
Okay, we'll have to see Judge Barton. Can you rule on that, please? Thank you.
Whatever.
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 Whatever worked.
Whatever worked. And the next show that Aidan and I were on together was the 6th of April 2019, show 79. And I was going to pick up something that is related to what you just spoke about, Steve. This one was from Steve Heinrich, and it was the 3M pressure fastening strips. And, I mean, I think they're probably very, very similar. You use them to stick stuff on the wall with, and they're very Velcro-like. In fact, you'd be forgiven by thinking they're exactly the same as the thing you've just spoken about, wouldn't you? So perhaps they are.
Well, yeah, I think there must be something about the command name which has caused them to patent their particular technique. I think certainly the idea of a pull strip to take out the glue without having to, you know, rip the paint off your wall every time. I think that's where the command's invention came from. These 3M strips are possibly just sticky strips, and you have to kind of leave them off the wall the old-fashioned way.
They're showing pictures here of somebody with a wooden strip on their wall holding things like hammers and saws. The question is, do you think that the ones that you spoke about earlier, you'd be able to do that with?
You can't hang hammers on from anything. If a hammer will pull off an adhesive strip in a week or a month. It might hold for a few days, and then it will peel off on the next hot day, and you'll look like a right prat.
I've got to say, I was very impressed with the idea of the pulling down to remove it. I mean, the idea that you stretch the glue to such a point that it just comes away from the wall. That is very, very clever. Yeah, that's the fiendish part, isn't it?
Yeah.
Now, as it happens, what I've picked for this whatever worked is a product you brought on. Or rather, I should say, Steve, you brought the Blitzwolf BWAR182 cordless vacuum cleaner onto the show.
Hurrah.
And I remember that well because it kick-started my fetish for cordless vacuums. Until then, I'd always considered cordless vacuums to be awful. The reason being, I'd always bought the cheap and cheerful ones off the web that, you know, cost 10 quid and were terrible. As a consequence, I went out and bought myself a Black & Decker Dustbuster. And then I can't turn it off now. The sound effects, yes, thank you very much. And then I actually bought Dustbuster Wet & Dry for the kitchen. And I find them absolutely fantastic. And I must say, live on air, that I'm very grateful to you, Steve, for opening my eyes to decent mini vacuums, because I'm absolutely lost in my kitchen without the Dustbuster vacuum cleaner. So, yeah, vive la mini vacuum, and thank you, Steve, for making me realise you do have to spend a few quid because you get what you pay for.
Absolutely. Oh. I was just going to say exactly the same thing. We ended up, although we used the Blitzwolf for a while, the original one, it was a bit cheap and cheerful. We ended up upgrading to one made by Shark, which apparently is the market leader in terms of the top end.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been absolutely invaluable. As you say, you just have it around the kitchen. Anytime anything needs cleaning or hoovering up, is there. No worries about wires, worries about plugging it in, it just works. So, yeah.
Absolutely.
Agreed.
Great stuff.
We have Matt Jones on chicken wings. I'm glad you gave this one to me, Aidan, because I'm going to agree with him. Matt says, what is the point? Mostly bone, gristle and skin, hardly any meat, messy to eat, leaving you with what feels like 60% waste. Does anyone want to defend them? I see them on menus all over the place. I just don't get it. Unless you are dieting and don't actually want to eat very much, I'm completely with you. I've never seen the point of chicken wings. I always go for the breast or whatever, or thighs. The wings, somebody else can have them. They can spend half an hour picking away at them. That's my take. Well done.
Well, I saw this going on MeWe, and I facetiously put in, well, should I mention frog's legs? Because, of course, they're even tinier with even less meat on them. Scott Brady, then, and absolutely delicious, by the way. I have to confess, I apologise to those who don't approve, but I have eaten frog's legs, and they are absolutely gorgeous and well worth the effort. Scott Brady popped in with, here in the USA, wings are often served as buffalo wings, meaning hot and spicy and served with blue cheese dressing for dipping. Ooh, it must be the sauce and dressing that people buy them for.
Mm. Very nice.
Buffaloes don't have wings, do they? Am I missing something here? The buffaloes have wings?
Who knows?
You, Steve, you've got to join in with the ah.
All right, one, two, three.
Dear North Wales, gold stars in North Wales NHS. Yet again, they bend over backwards to do absolutely everything they can for my 89-year-old dad. Gone are the days when older people were considered not worth bothering with or spending money on, apparently. They're probably all frightened of being sued, aren't they? But maybe it's just a North Wales thing. And, you know, Labour devolved powers in Wales, making sure the NHS does stuff that it doesn't do elsewhere. I mean, everyone in Wales gets free prescriptions still here, and also free bus passes for anyone over 60, not just in the county they live in, but right across Wales. So I've spoken to my neighbour here about, they live in England and have a static here, and they come over periodically, and they can't believe the NHS service in North Wales, or in the whole of Wales, really, because where they come from in Sale, somewhere near Manchester, they said, you just get nothing like this kind of service. It's just terrible over there. And, you know, people living in North Wales have a really, really good time. So, yeah, North Wales, or all of Wales NHS, I think, is worthy of a shout.
I have to say, looking after my mother, you know, barely a week goes by when we're not visiting a hospital or a doctor or a dentist or some sort of medical establishment. And again, I feel the same, Ted. The NHS here, as far as my mother's treatment is concerned, are fantastic. And whenever we go anywhere, my mother is always saying how beautifully she's looked after and how kind everybody is. So in that respect, I think it is the same here. You were going to say something, Steve.
Well, I was just going to give a big cheery here. I mean, anything good about the NHS is great to hear, and I can wholeheartedly say that the NHS in Berkshire, down south, well, is it down south anyway? In central England, Berkshire and Reading is absolutely fantastic, and the waiting lists aren't very long, and they're always cheery and happy to help out. So right. Three cheers for the NHS across the board.
I think the thing that my mother and I have discussed is that while there may be, or indeed there are, considerable administrative and organisation problems and difficulties and delays and hold up, the actual on-the-ground staff are always phenomenal. That's the way we look at it.
Yeah. Having mentioned buffaloes earlier, we're now on to gorillas. Just my gold star is for Gorilla tape. Now, we all know sort of black duct tape. We've all got rolls of it, and we use it for strapping around things, and it does a great job. And when I send parcels up to Ted, I usually wrap up a strip of black gaffer tape, and it does a good job. It's cloth. You can tear it with your hands rather than needing scissors. But if you want the ultimate duct tape, it's Gorilla tape, all-weather extreme, and it's rated for outdoor jobs, so you can actually use it to fix leaks and wrap around pipes, and it stays really tacky and waterproof and solid, 2, 3, 4 years. It's amazing stuff. It costs £8 a roll, but you do get what you pay for. So, yeah, I'd be very happy with Gorilla Tape. It's not actually that long. You know, you run through a roll quite quickly, but you can do all sorts of fancy repairs around the house without getting men in and without incurring vast repair bills. So I think it saves money in the long run.
Is it very good. Extraordinarily sticky, like the stuff I described earlier for the pond? I mean, do you have to sort of really pull on it to get it away from itself when you're unrolling it?
More or less, they may be related products.
Yes, okay.
Look, I can tell you that when Steve sends me a parcel, there's no way you can pull it off. You have to cut it off. It's really well stuck down. The only thing that I would say about Gorilla products, and I've said this on the show before, is that I tried whatever it is called, their version of super glue, and I just thought it was awful. It was nothing like the Loctite original super glue. It was just rubbish. Now, whether they've made it better since that, when we spoke about it last, I don't know. But yeah, hopefully the tape is better than the super glue, whatever it's called.
I do have a tale on super glue, and ever people used to swear by super glue. But, you know, don't get it on you because your fingers will be stuck for months or whatever. Every time I've used super glue, every time things have just fallen apart and have been utterly useless, the best glue is just a bog standard, you know, Yoohoo or something costing £1.20 down the supermarket. And that seems to do the job. So my top tip here would be don't bother with super glue. Stick to Gorilla Tape and your supermarket Yoohoo and you'll be good to go.
It's funny, isn't it, how everyone's experience is different, because I would say the complete opposite. Whenever I've used Loctite superglue, it's just been brilliant and it does stick to your fingers like nothing else. And whereas other things, I think, just, you know, like that Yoohoo stuff, I've tried that and it just doesn't seem to work. So everyone's experience is different. You can adjudicate, Aidan.
Epoxy resin. That's my go-to. I tend to agree with Steve, actually, about the super glue. I'm sort of 50-50. A lot of times I do find super glue is useless. If I really, really, really need to stick something solid, I'll go for an epoxy resin every time.
Mm-hmm. Okay, fair enough. All right, I think we're done. We're up to the hour. And thank you, Steve, for joining us on
Indeed,
this show.
Indeed, thank
it's
you very much,
to
Steve.
A guest and someone else to throw things around with.
Yeah, I'll come back in 6 months and save up some more things to ramble about.
Great, you'll be very welcome. Whateverworks.works is our website, of course. AidanBell.com is where you'll find Aidan. StepheLitchfield.com is where you'll find Steve. TedSalmon.com is where you'll find me. Links there to all the stuff we do in audio podcast land, and also our MeWe groups. So do head across there to find those. They're also at PodHub UK, so you can find them there as well. So that's it then. We'll be back in 2 or 3 weeks' time, depending on the way the wind's blowing. And last word, as always, to you, Aidan.
I wish the wind was blowing. I'm going to go outside and jump into the pond. It's 28 degrees in here now, and I'm only wearing enough clothes to keep me decent. So it's been a hot one today, folks. Everybody stay safe and cool, and I'll see you in a couple of weeks.
Let's get away from here and get into the ice cream, shall we? One last thing to say, as always, don't forget... Whatever works.
Sometimes.